You're standing at the fuel pump with three friends and a weekend bag each, and the math you're about to do might be the most important math of the whole trip. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern right here on Radio Hangar, and today we're talking about weight and balance for cross-country flights. Not the textbook version you memorize for the written, the real version, the one where your buddy says he weighs 180, and you're pretty sure he hasn't seen 180 since high school. Let's get into it. Shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that? Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered? Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Weight and balance is not just a check ride item, it's the calculation that determines whether your airplane actually performs like the numbers in the pilot's operating handbook say it will. Every takeoff distance, every climb rate, every stall speed in that book was tested at a specific weight and a specific center of gravity location. Change those numbers, and the airplane changes too. Sometimes a little, sometimes a lot. So let's walk through this together, because if you're planning a cross-country with passengers and baggage, this is where good planning either keeps you safe or puts you in a bad spot before the wheels ever leave the ground. First, let's talk about what we're actually calculating. Two things. Total weight and center of gravity position. They're related, but they're separate problems, and you need to solve both. Total weight is straightforward, you're adding up everything. The airplane's basic empty weight, which you find in the aircraft's specific weight and balance data sheet. Not the one in the generic POH. The one for your actual airplane, with its actual serial number. Because every airplane is a little different. Then you add fuel, then pilot and front seat passenger, then rear seat passengers, then baggage. Everything adds up to a gross weight, and that number has a limit. For a Cessna 172S model, max takeoff weight is 2,550 pounds. That sounds like a lot until you start adding things up. Basic empty weight on a typical 172S is around 1,680 pounds. Right there, you've already used up about 66% of your capacity just with the airplane sitting empty on the ramp. Now add full fuel. 56 gallons usable at 6 pounds per gallon, that's 336 pounds, you're already at 2,016 pounds. You've got 534 pounds left for people in bags, 534 pounds for four people and their stuff. See where this is going? If you and your three friends each weigh 180 pounds, that's 720 pounds of human, you're already 186 pounds over gross. And that's before a single bag goes in the airplane. This is the moment where a lot of student pilots freeze up because nobody told them that a four-seat airplane is not a four-person airplane, not with full fuel. A Cessna 172 is really a two-people in full-fuel airplane or a four-people in reduced-fuel airplane. You have to choose. And here's where cross-country planning gets interesting, because now your weight and balance calculation is directly connected to your fuel planning. If you need to reduce fuel to stay under gross weight, you need to know exactly how much fuel the trip requires. That means you need your nav log done first. You need to know the distance, the winds, the fuel burn rate at your planned altitude and power setting, and how much reserve you're carrying. Let's say your cross-country is 200 nautical miles in a 172. At about 110 knots true airspeed, you're looking at roughly 1 hour and 50 minutes of flight time, depending on wind, at about 8.5 gallons per hour. That's around 16 gallons for the trip. FAR 91.151 requires enough fuel to fly to your destination and then fly for 30 minutes beyond that during the day. 30 minutes at 8.5 gallons is a little over 4 gallons, so you need about 20 gallons minimum. Call it 25 to give yourself a real margin, not just a legal one. 25 gallons at 6 pounds per gallon is 150 pounds of fuel. Now your airplane weighs 1,830 pounds empty plus fuel. That leaves you 720 pounds for people and bags. Now your four friends at 180 each can get in, and you've got 0 pounds for baggage, exactly zero. So maybe you take three people instead of four. Maybe you ask everyone to pack light. Maybe you plan a fuel stop. These are all real decisions that come out of the weight and balance calculation, and they need to happen on the ground, not in the air. Now, let's talk about the second half center of gravity. This is the one that a lot of pilots treat as an afterthought, and it shouldn't be. Center of gravity, or CG, is the point along the airplane's longitudinal axis where all the weight balances. Think of it like a seesaw. If you load all the heavy stuff in the back, the CG moves aft. If it's all up front, the CG moves forward. Your airplane has a forward CG limit and an aft CG limit, and you need to be between them. Here's why it matters. A forward CG makes the airplane more stable but harder to rotate on takeoff and harder to flare on landing. You'll need more back pressure, more trim, and you'll use more fuel because the tail is working harder to keep the nose where you want it. If you're really far forward, you might not be able to flare at all at low speeds. That's a problem. An aft CG is the dangerous one. It makes the airplane less stable. It reduces the effectiveness of the elevator. In the worst case, it can make the airplane unrecoverable from a stall because you literally run out of elevator authority to push the nose down. The stall speed also decreases with an aft CG, which sounds like a good thing, until you realize that the airplane is also much easier to stall inadvertently because it's less stable. The examiner is looking for you to understand this on your check ride. Not just the math. The why. Why does CG position matter? What happens if you're out of the envelope? The Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate specifically say you need to be able to determine the effects of weight and balance on performance. That means you should be able to explain what happens to takeoff distance, climb rate, cruise speed, stall speed, and landing distance when the airplane is heavy versus light, and when the CG is forward versus aft. Let me give you a real scenario. You're planning a cross-country from a sea-level airport to a mountain airport at elevation 5,300 feet. It's July. The temperature is 32 degrees Celsius. You've got three people on board and bags in the back. You run your weight and balance. Total weight is 2,480 pounds, under gross. CG is within limits. You're legal, but are you safe? At that destination airport with that temperature and elevation, your density altitude might be 8,000 feet or higher. Pull out your performance charts at 2,480 pounds and a density altitude of 8,000 feet. What's your landing distance? What's your takeoff distance if you need to depart again? What's your climb rate? This is where weight and balance connects to performance planning, and they should never be separated. Being under gross weight doesn't mean you can operate safely at every airport on your route. A 2,480 pound airplane at density altitude of 8,000 feet performs very differently than the same airplane at the same weight at sea level on a cool morning. So here's what I want you to do on every cross country, not just the ones with a check ride at the end. Step 1, get honest weights. Ask your passengers what they actually weigh. I know it's awkward. I know nobody likes that conversation. But the airplane doesn't care about social norms. It cares about physics, if you're uncomfortable asking. Estimate conservatively. Add 10 or 15 pounds per person. Better to calculate heavy and be pleasantly surprised than to calculate light and find out you're sluggish on climb out. Step 2. Weigh the bags, or at least estimate honestly. A weekend bag might be 20 pounds. A bag packed for a week at the beach might be 40. A cooler full of drinks and ice, that can be 50 pounds easily. It all goes on the form. Step 3. Use the actual weight and balance sheet for your specific airplane. Not the sample in the POH, not the one from a different tail number. Your airplane, if you're renting, the flight school should have this in the aircraft binder. If it's not there, ask. If they can't find it, that's a red flag. Step 4. Plot it on the envelope. Don't just check that the weight is under max gross. Plot the CG on the chart and make sure it falls inside the envelope at takeoff weight and at landing weight. Your CG can shift during flight as you burn fuel, because fuel has a moment arm too. In most trainers, burning fuel from the wing tanks moves the CG slightly, and you want to make sure it stays in the envelope throughout the flight. Step 5. If you're close to limits, consider what changes during the flight. You'll burn fuel, so you'll get lighter. But if you loaded the baggage compartment to its limit and you burn fuel from the wings, your CG shifts aft. Make sure you're still in the envelope at your estimated landing weight with the fuel burned off. Step 6. Run the performance charts at the new weight. Check your takeoff distance, climb rate, and landing distance for every airport you plan to use, including your alternates. Use the density altitude for the time of day you'll actually be there. Not the best case morning temperature. Here's something that catches people. The baggage compartment has its own weight limit and it's separate from the gross weight limit. In a 172, the baggage area is typically limited to 120 pounds. You can be under gross weight and still exceed the baggage compartment limit. Overloading the baggage area puts structural stress on the airframe that it wasn't designed to handle, and it shoves your CG aft, sometimes past the limit. I've seen students load a cross-country airplane and have the total weight be fine, but the CG is a quarter inch past the aft limit on the chart. A quarter inch doesn't sound like much on paper, but that quarter inch represents a measurable change in how the airplane handles, especially at low speed. It's outside the tested envelope. You don't know how it will behave there because nobody tested it there. That's not where you want to be finding out. One more thing. If you're planning a cross-country for your check ride, the examiner will probably ask you to walk through your weight and balance calculation. Have it done, have it neat, have it plotted on the envelope, and be ready to explain what you'd do if it came out over gross or out of CG range. The answer is not fudge the numbers. The answer is reduce fuel, leave a passenger behind, redistribute the load, or don't go. Those are all acceptable answers. Fudging is not. The weight and balance calculation is one of those things that feels tedious until the day it saves you. And you won't know which day that is, which is why you do it every time. This one came together from the Cessna 172 SPOH, the FAA Weight and Balance Handbook, and the Private Pilot Airman Certification Standards. Good bedtime reading if you're into that sort of thing. Everything is always at radiohangar.com. That's it for today. Go weigh your bags. I'll see you next time.